Maine's libraries, they are far different than they used to be. If you haven't stepped foot into a library lately, you might be surprised. Chances are your library offers a lot more than it used to. All over America, libraries are undergoing dramatic transformations, and in Maine, it's no different. What used to be a quiet place to read or check out books is still that, but it is also an information hub, the place to launch your job search, learn a new computer program, hold a meeting with your community group, or see an art show. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll talk with three library directors about the changing role of the library in Maine, what the library of the future may look like, and what kinds of challenges libraries face. From information center to cultural center, Maine Calling heads to the library. But first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. For some, libraries are a relic of the past, a reminder that in our digital age, good old-fashioned hard copy books still exist. But for others, the library is an essential part of living, the place to connect with the rest of the world. Today, we're going to learn about how libraries have adapted to adjust to the digital age. And many of you might be surprised by all that your local library has to offer. In the studio with me, Jamie Ritter, who is Director of Reader and Information Services at the Maine State Library. He is also Vice Chairman of the Maine State Library Commission. Barbara McDade is the director of the Bangor Public Library, and Steve Bagoni is executive director of the Portland Public Library. Of course, we want to hear from you. When is the last time you went to the library? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. You can send us a tweet at Maine Calling, or you can post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. And thank you all for being here today. And I'm going to start with the same question for each of you. And Steve, you get to start because I know that you've got a big answer to this one. But how is your specific library, the library that you represent, different than it was 5 years ago?
Boy, I think the gradual nature of changes in libraries makes it hard, actually, to answer that quickly. But I will say that the physical change of our main library and our focus on environments has been a driver for a lot of service changes. So, for example, the library's embracing of its role, the main library particularly, as a cultural center, and its occupation of one end of the Arts District in Portland on Monument Square has been a very, very important recognition for us. Other things have had better expression in the new space, such as our public technology. And that's not necessarily a new thing, but what I think, a real focus and awareness is the identification of specific constituencies and specific areas. So things like business and government, science and technology, health, history, things that we focus on very directly and intentionally now, rather than sitting back and waiting for whoever might come in and how you might serve them, in some cases, serendipitously.
So what do you mean by that? So you've identified an area of computers that are focused on science and technology, and a staff member to help people with those? Or?
Yeah, I think teams that are formed around these specific topics and constituents that deliver service and actually have budgets and spend money.
So not only have you renovated the library, but you've completely reorganized the way your staff works with the clients.
Yes, to work with the space that we currently have. I think the cultural center part is an enormous change for the library in terms of how we express our mission. And I can give you an example. The last Friday Art Walk in Portland, on that night, there was an opening of a fiddler, Wicked Good Fiddling exhibit that is there for 2 months in the Lewis Gallery. There was the rollout of the Casco Bay Weekly, its digitized version, something that existed. Many of the listeners will remember the Casco Bay Weekly. It's 18 years of being very effective as a public record of the culture of Maine. That rolled out that night in its digitized version, and the Bates Dance Festival was dancing in the atrium of the Maine Library. So if you want a representation of the range of what's happening with a public library, that's a pretty good one.
Barbara McDade, how has the Bangor Public Library changed in the last 5 years?
Well, as you may know, we also are going through a renovation and going in this a lot of the same directions that Steve is doing. And we're doing this because of our community. We found last year we had 550 meetings in the library that were not library related. So we really are becoming a community center. People are looking for us for space. We have monthly exhibits in two different galleries, so we're part of that too. And, you know, we always said that we brought the world to Bangor, but now we're saying we're taking Bangor to the world, and we're doing that through a digital commons. We're trying to get things that are going on in Bangor up digitally, both our history and our current cultural events, in a digital form so that we can get out there on the world and people can find Bangor.
What is digital commons?
Digital commons is just a place. Actually, all three of us are doing it. We are digitalizing the Bangor Daily News archives. We have the Bangor Historical Society archives that we're putting up. Those are all digital pieces. But we're also hoping to work with, like, the Waterfront Concerts and the American Folk Festival to get those things both things as easy as posters, but to get interviews and get them online and up that people can find them.
Right, so people don't even have to come into the library to use library resources.
Correct.
Jamie Ritter, I want to bring you into the conversation. You don't really represent a local library. You represent all of our, a library that belongs to all of us, the Maine State Library. How are things different then? And I know that you all have been transforming yourself in a very challenging fiscal, atmosphere, as are all libraries, but I know especially with the state budget issues that it's been especially difficult up where you are.
We have, and thank you for recognizing the difference. And here I am sitting between Steve and Barbara, kind of the hybrid library. Linda Lord, the state librarian, likes to say, if you've seen one state library, you've seen one state library. And the way we're organized is in two distinct divisions, a library development division that works with public libraries throughout all of Maine, and then at the State Library, literally located in Augusta there, the complex, we have a public library that people come in to do all sorts of things. We've changed in a number of ways. I think we've always been collaborative, but I think we've been even more collaborative over the last few years. Library development has initiated an incredible Learning Express library. It's completely digital. All academic, all school, and all public libraries have it, as well as Maine's career centers. And this is really a comprehensive digital platform where people can go to learn all sorts of job-related skills, the ASVAB.
What did you call it?
It's called Learning Express.
Learning Express.
Learning Express. And anyone out there can Google Learning Express in Maine or just ask your librarian. So that's a great example of a collaboration that's happening. And then in the library, where we're also moving forward with technology, which I think we'll talk a lot about, but from digital microfilm readers that can really do wonders for people, access to numerous public computers, which are pretty typical in public libraries, and even more recently, what we're calling a remaker space, and it features some neat technology that allow people to transition what we're categorizing as analog collections. So, scanning old photos into new formats. We have a digital LP player, so they can bring in their old albums and put them into MP3 files. We have a VHS to DVD converter. So it's pretty cool stuff that's happening.
Oh, boy. I'll be there.
Absolutely. Bring it in.
Some of these things that we need to have done. Steve, you mentioned something earlier that was sort of touches on a question I wanted to ask, which is I'm reading about libraries, this idea that libraries have shifted from centers of information to centers of culture. You called yourself a cultural center. Is it accurate to say that that's sort of the big shift that's going on, the shift from a center of information to a center of culture?
I am always very wary of categorizing libraries as one or the other. It's been historically true that public libraries particularly have done all of these things in pieces. So, you know, it's not a shock to people who use public libraries that they've found exhibits there, that they found lectures, book clubs, physical collections, places to sit and read, places to meet people. We've been doing that forever. What I think is different, though, is that there's a more it's more intentional around the degree of recognition around the degree of the meeting space and the community center piece. But it's always been there. It's always been there in pieces. I think what is missing that's not recognized often is the fact that public libraries offer depth of information within their information centers. So you don't, as an information center, you don't have blocks and blocks of journals that are built in the middle of anywhere that a library actually has access to. So if you look at the information that's available through the web, is web access from public libraries, but it's not available on the web casually. In other words, we pay for it. We buy it. We curate it. We have it available. It's a hugely important resource that promotes business development, economic development, individuals reaching potential. This is the enormous change for me as an information center. I think it's very, very dynamic and important. Unfortunately, though, it's kind of invisible often to the eye because it's not physically manifest in front of you.
Okay. Barbara, you mentioned that there had been 550 meetings at the Bangor Public Library last year. Who's meeting there? Who's using it?
All kinds of nonprofit organizations. We even have had a wedding there last month. But generally they are nonprofit organizations that are looking for space. They're arts organizations. I don't know what to say. Just everyone meets at the library.
Jamie, you're nodding.
Well, I think one thing, we tend to know the numbers of the number of people who grace the doors of libraries. But, there are a few million each year in Maine. So, for example, Portland Public alone, 665,000 visits a year. There are enormous numbers of people who use a library for all different kinds of reasons, and they're all different kinds of users.
And it's that common ground. I think people feel comfortable in the library. Not to mention the technology offering. So any group can come in with, if they have their laptops or whatever they need. It's a great space for them to meet.
Mm-hmm. I remember when I did some reporting before, somebody made the point that it's multi-generational. If a grandparent is with his or her grandchildren for the day, it's a great place and welcoming to everyone.
Right.
I wanted to ask about, I'm sorry, I've lost my train of thought here. My goodness. The future. And I know that you all are probably dealing with so many changes so quickly that it's difficult to even think about the future. But what do you see? What in 2025, what kind of conversation are we going to be having? What, Barbara, is your library going to offer?
Well, we worried several years ago that the print was going to go away, and now I don't think that people are saying that as much. We see people with their e-readers, and we know that that's an added service that we have to have, our access to e-books. But we found that people actually are coming back to print. They would actually rather use a real hard copy of a book. There are times to have e-readers. So we have worked on something called the Maine Shared Print Collection, which the eight largest libraries in the state are getting together and studied how we could save our legacy print collections so people will still have access to those. The grant is just ending, and all three of us, as well as Colby Bates and Bowden and the University of Maine and the University of Southern Maine, were part of the grant. And so for at least the next 15 years, we know who's going to have that last copy of the book that people can have access to. In one sense, Amazon has made books cheap. They've made books cheap, and more books are being published. And so I see the library's role as winnowing it down to make choices easier for people. to find both the information and the books that they're looking for. At one point in time, you could almost, a public library could buy everything. Now we have to provide access to it, and that's getting harder and harder to do.
Jamie, how do you see libraries changing in the near future?
Yeah, I think taking what Barbara said and sort of juxtaposed, she mentioned the digital commons and used the term bringing your library to the world. Libraries traditionally have been able to amass collections that really brought the world to their community. So the play on words there is really significant because now with our ability to digitize materials and have them accessible, we really can make these local, rare, unique collections available. And I think all of us are working on ways to do that, tying it into bringing Maine, I should say, into the Digital Public Library of America so that Maine's collections are accessible through that as well. So I see those changes happening. And at the same time, I think we're going to be talking about the tried and true things that we've always done for many years to come. I mean, we are this bastion of democracy, libraries. I mean, you walk through a library door and it matters not who you are. You can get anything you want. It's confidential. And we exist for that purpose.
Great. Well, on that note, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll have your comments and questions. Stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Baxter Brewing Company in Lewiston, committed to 100% wind-powered beer production. BaxterBrewing.com.
The movies Next Stop Greenwich Village, Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice, Bloom in Love, Harry and Tonto, Moscow on the Hudson, and An Unmarried Woman were directed by Paul Mazursky. He died June 30th at the age of 84. On the next Fresh Air, we listen back to excerpts of the interviews we recorded in 1991 and 99. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock here on MPBN Radio. MPBN Radio constantly strives to offer the best possible programming at the most convenient times. And if you appreciate classical music, it's actually available 24 hours a day, online, at mpbn.net. Classical music, all the time, wherever you want. Simply click on Listen Live at the top of the page. mpbn.net also offers a live stream of our main on-air programming for those times when you're not near a radio or you find yourself where our on-air signal may not reach well.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the state of Maine's libraries. In the studio with me, Barbara McDade, who is director of the Bangor Public Library, Steve Pagoni, executive director of the Portland Public Library, and Jamie Ritter, director of Reader and Information Services at the Maine State Library. We invite you to join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet at Maine Calling, or you can post to our Facebook page. We are going to open up the phones and begin with Sharon in Bangor. Hi, Sharon. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I have two positive comments. I was thrilled with the Eleanor Roosevelt tea. It was fabulous. I don't drive, and I was able to attend that, not being able to get to Campobello Island for that. It was very informative. The ladies who did the tea were very pleasant. And the other comment I'd like to make in a positive vein is I love the fact that you now have an email notifying you when a book is available that you've asked for. Because, again, I don't drive, and when I'm notified by email, I know that I can come down. I have a couple negative comments, though. One, your Civil War exhibit is wonderful, but you've got teeny tiny things in a glass case, and I do wish that some of your exhibits were more enlarged for visually impaired people and visually impaired senior citizens. And my last comment is you used to have a CCTV located by the elevator for people who are visually impaired. To use. I used it extensively when I was unemployed to fill out the cards for unemployment. This was several years ago. They don't do that now. but I wonder what happened to it.
Okay, Sharon, well, I guess you're talking about the Bangor Public Library since you're calling from Bangor, and I'm going to have Barbara respond to some of your thoughts.
Thank you for your positive comments. I'm sorry I couldn't make the tea. That was a wonderful collaboration with MPBN and ourselves, and I heard that it really was wonderful. I don't know where our CCTV is. We had three of them throughout the building, and I will look and find out what happened to it because I know that they still work. They are wonderful things. They enlarge print so that people that are having trouble with the fine print can see what needs to be read, and we do have those throughout the building, and I'll find out where the one that was near the elevator is and put it back.
And Sharon's call reminded me of a conversation I had several years ago with Betsy Pohl up at the Lithgow Library in Augusta. She gave me some, and I can't remember the number exactly, but some incredible number of how many people use the library for a job search. You know, the caller Sharon mentioned that when she was unemployed, she used the library, that it really could possibly be the number one reason for using a local library today.
Yeah. Along with email and health information, the job searching career. Exploration are major technology uses. Yeah.
Sharon, thanks so much for calling in. Headed to Beth in Southwest Harbor. Hi, Beth.
Hi there. Thank you very much for taking my call. I just wanted to crow about our small town library here in Southwest Harbor. It is just a fantastic little library, and it just is welcoming. It draws people in. It's got wonderful sections for young readers, for very little kids, and then another section for adult readers. You know, you could sit anywhere. But it's just a wonderful addition to our town, and it just is doing so much. It also has access to free Wi-Fi and computers that are there on the desktop that people can sign out for 30 minutes. Every month they have a different show on the walls or on the tops of counters, and they bring in people, volunteers, a couple of times a month to help those of us who are not so great with technology to figure out how to use our Kindles and those kinds of things. It's just the best library ever.
I have a feeling you'll have people disagreeing with you, Beth, that they think theirs is the best library ever. But I'm so glad you called in. She talked about people bringing Kindles in for advice. Yeah. Have the staffs at your libraries have to undergo a lot of training to keep up with everything people want from you?
Absolutely. And we're keeping up, though. And that's the beauty of libraries and the way staff respond. We actually have implemented Tech Tuesday. So one of our librarians on staff entertains anyone coming through the door on those days or Tech Tuesdays and Thursdays rather, and can do it by appointment. So we do exactly that. Show people how to use Kindles, e-readers.
Everybody's nodding.
Yes.
Very
Thanks
important.
So much for your call, Beth. Going to Carolyn in Georgetown.
Hi, this is Carolyn.
Go ahead.
I got my degree in library science from Simmons in 1979, had been working at the public library in Portland for many years, well, several years, and I was part of the whole transition from what we might consider the old traditional book-oriented, print-oriented collection to an introduction to the newer ways of delivering information. And I can't even tell you how proud I am that Maine joined a very, very early community of largely rural states in trying their very best to deliver universal access to the Internet to everyone. And I just think it's a matter of pride that so many people take for advantage now and don't realize that we had leadership, Linda Lord, Angus King, various other people, who just insisted this needed to be the way to go. And I'm very proud to have been part of it.
Well, Carolyn, thanks so much for calling in. Everybody in the studio is nodding, but it's always good to be reminded that we sometimes take these great things for granted.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really provided the infrastructure for moving forward. We talk about the future, but all that groundwork laid in the past really is there now for people learning via long distance, small businesses needing broadband. So it's been work well done, but now we're well positioned because of it.
And every library in the state is connected, and not every state can say that even now.
Right. It's very sexy to talk about the bandwidth because it takes an awful lot of work to employ it. But, the physical delivery of material, it actually works on something as basic as a courier service between the libraries. So it's a lot of factors come together.
All right. Well, we have two questions. Thank you so much, Carolyn, for calling in. We have two questions that are related. A Facebook page comment from Charles. He asks, how come so much technology is wasted in Maine libraries, specifically the video conference equipment that some libraries have two of and don't even use one? That's his question. We're also going to go to Scott in Bath. Scott, you have a question about teleconference systems, don't you?
Actually, just a comment. I work with a group called the Maine Continuum of Care, and we've been organizing our meetings for the last probably close to a year now through the library system's teleconferencing equipment, and it has been wonderful. We are a statewide organization, and we've always struggled with getting people to participate because it has required travel for folks outside of – I work in Augusta, so for folks outside of the greater Augusta area – travel was always an issue, but utilizing the local libraries, we've been able to connect to as many as 6 different locations and have people go to their nearby library and fully participate in a meaningful way in our meetings.
So for somebody who might not know what a teleconference is, you all are all in different libraries in a small meeting room, and you can see each other on what looks like small television sets, right?
Exactly, and it's
or computers.
A face-to-face interaction, and we tried just having conference calls, but people, they're multitasking. They're at their desk. They're holding the phone with their shoulder, and they're typing away, or they're doing something else, and they're not really fully present for the meeting. But this allows us to have several small groups collected so that there's still that feel of being part of the meeting. You can see the other people. You can see the facial expressions and the body language, and it keeps people more engaged than just being on the phone or, even some of the computer-based systems. We tried those as well, and again, it was a struggle to really get people to engage because they were alone at their desk.
So let me turn to my librarians here. Charles on the Facebook page seems to be under the impression that teleconference systems are not used, but you all are saying the opposite. They are very well used in your libraries.
They could be more heavily used, no question about it. But they are being used.
Yeah, they are being used. And perhaps some context, and it can be dangerous to venture a guess as to what's happening in this particular library. But through the Broadband Technology Opportunity Program, BTOP is what we call it, a grant, put more of these systems in more libraries throughout the state. So it's very possible the one not being used is outmoded or older or something of that nature.
And it's great for not only meetings. People do come in and book them for meetings. But we had a program for a while with UNE where they had speakers down in the southern part of the state, and people in Bangor could participate, not only hearing the speaker, but actually participating, asking questions, and being part of the audience.
Okay. Well, Scott, thanks so much for calling in. We're going to go now to, Greg in Gorham. Hi, Greg. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hey, guys. First of all, thank you all for doing this program. I am actually based in Washington State as a digital librarian, and I appreciate everything that you guys are doing. I've been traveling Maine for about 2 weeks, checking out small libraries in locations like Southwest Harbor and Castine and Blue Hill and Farmington. And my question is, with all of the resources that are in the bigger areas like the city libraries, how are you taking the innovations and services and all of the cool stuff that you're doing that you would typically see in academic libraries and city libraries, and how are you spreading the ideas and encouraging the ideas to communities that might not have as much access to the resources that you do?
Well, Jamie, you work directly or have worked directly with many smaller libraries, don't you?
We do. And the best example that I can give to respond to the question is the we call it the technology petting zoo. So we basically have six, we'll call them kits, that have 5 to 6 different e-reader, iPad devices in them that travel out to these smaller libraries. And it comes with the training for those devices as well. So that's an example of putting technology on the road and really just trying to secure through be it federal grants or whatnot, technology that can go into some of these smaller communities.
I think the biggest thing, I think that's a great example of on the ground moving out of innovation. But I think the other huge one, again, is an infrastructure step, which was expansion of MainCat, which we're involved in right now, and finding a price
point. MainCat?
MainCat, which is the catalog of, I don't want to use union catalog of many, many libraries in the state. Mm-hmm. And one of our challenges was being able to find a way forward that we could get smaller libraries throughout the state that had the connectivity that we've talked about and have them participate, have their holdings online, and have them be able to request directly materials from Bangor, Portland, Bowdoin, USM, UMO, wherever, to be delivered to those libraries and interlibrary loan, directly requesting them. And in the last year, we've worked very hard as a community to get those libraries to be able to participate, to find a price point that they could do that. And I think that's an enormous step forward. It's something, a nut we've been trying to crack now for about 20 years, frankly.
That's important, but I think the important thing that hasn't been said yet is how cooperative Maine libraries are. And we have the statewide databases, which we talked about before. We have the download library for ebooks and downloadable audiobooks. And then, as Steve was talking about, interlibrary loan, just all of the libraries of whatever type and whatever size are part of this. And so somebody in Presque Isle or somebody in York can download an ebook or use an audiobook. It's pretty amazing. And the delivery service is remarkable. So you want a book, and you know, if it takes 2 days nowadays, that's a long time. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, the Maine legislature over the past two cycles has invested $125,000 into the van delivery service. So to Steve's point, the infrastructure's there. We can help pay for that service for these smaller libraries, and it makes a big difference.
Yeah. Thanks so much for calling in, Greg. I hope you enjoy your 2 weeks in Maine. And we're going to take another quick break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Casella, committed to boosting recycling rates statewide through its One Bin, Zero Sort program. Casella, giving resources new life. And Maine's public universities. You can help make Maine even smarter and stronger. Learn more at think.maine.edu.
Intelligence Squared U.S., where the world's leading thinkers debate today's most critical issues. The next motion up for debate: individuals and organizations have a constitutional right to unlimited spending on their own political speech.
Politicians are most influenced by their ideology and by their constituents, not by donors.
Whose telephone call do they take after the election?
Join us for this program coming up in just a few minutes at 1 o'clock this afternoon. The MPBN Community Calendar easily answers two questions: what is there to do, and how does my organization get the word out about an upcoming event? The MPBN Community Calendar is online, alive and well, at mpbn.net. You can search for events by date, location, or type of event. Just about anything from classical to art exhibits to lectures, and then some. It's easy to enter information about your event. You just fill in the form, and we do the rest. MPBN's Community Calendar, a great resource for all of us, online at mpbn.net.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what does the future hold for Maine's libraries? In the studio with me, Steve Pagoni, Executive Director of the Portland Public Library, Jamie Ritter, Director of Reader and Information Services at the Maine State Library, and Barbara McDade, Director of the Bangor Public Library. We invite you to join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Before we go to the phones, I want to share with everybody a Facebook post, a post by Carl Little. He wants to remind us that the painter Allison Rector has done paintings of Maine libraries and that the show is going on right now at the Courthouse Gallery in Ellsworth. So there we go. If you want to see some of these beautiful, I mean, throughout Maine, beautiful, especially small libraries, Allison Rector has done a beautiful show of those. We're going to go to Joe in Parsonsfield. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I'm going to sound ancient, but I give each month a number of periodicals from the Atlantic Monthly all the way to the Week, Sports Illustrated. And I just wondered, has the hands-on magazine, so to speak, is it not part of the regular budgets in libraries today? And then the other issue I would have we had any significant cuts since Governor LePage has been a governor in terms of aiding public libraries?
First of all, certainly print periodicals are a core part of every public library's budget. Back to what Barbara said very early on, in terms of the it's not an either-or, print or digital. There are only 4% of people in Pew studies who identified themselves as strictly e-reading public. Most people read both. So printed periodicals are alive and well. In terms of cuts recently to public library budgets, I think Jamie mentioned the money that the legislature came through for the physical delivery system, which is very important. I also want to mention that in Maine, unlike states such as Massachusetts and others, there's no direct support of public library budgets. There hasn't been for a long time. There was a time back in the 80s when the support went up to as high as 20 cents per capita for public libraries in the state, which is, of course, a minuscule amount of money. So one of the reasons you have, and we've heard this from people regularly, if you're a library, say, in Brunswick or some other place, the quality of that library relies almost completely on what the local funding is from the town. And so when people come to Maine, often they're mystified as to why they can't use one card at every library in the state. It's because we live in a locally funded environment for public libraries. And in fact, if you look at the physical structures, you mentioned the beautiful libraries in Maine. You can tell a lot about a town with how good the local library is because it's discretionary. That investment's being made on the backs of local taxpayers or private donations. There are an awful lot of private-public partnerships that happen in the creation of these libraries. But that's why you can't use your card anywhere, and there's essentially no money to be cut.
Well, and I'm guessing that looking to Joe's comment about seeing fewer periodicals at his library and you saying we're not either or, we're both, being both costs more.
Mm-hmm.
And so libraries are making decisions.
Well, unless you're taking advantage of the what was mentioned earlier, the statewide licensing for, tens of thousands, literally, of periodicals that exist for all of us in the state. So that's one of the cases where we've built a group sharing resource, and it can allow you to make sure you still have print collections there.
I have a Facebook post from Peg. Oh, Joe, thank you so much for calling. She starts by saying, I admit to being a member of the choir as I am a librarian. Goes on to say, one time type of library which is dependent upon the whims of administrators and townspeople is the school library. Many school libraries are being cut because some believe that, quote, everything is on the internet. This, as your guests can agree on, may be true. However, the librarian is needed to teach students the best methods of searching and research. Not all of my students go to the public library. All of them are able to go to the school library. all libraries serve a wide and important number of people. And related to Peg's Facebook post, I came across an article from the American Library Association expressing great concern about the state of school libraries throughout the country.
Yeah, I mean, we could probably all weigh in some way or another. School libraries have probably been hardest hit in some ways over the last decade of funding cuts and diminishing the role of the true librarian in the school, and it's and it shows. It hurts. I feel for Peg, and I understand where she's coming from.
It is a shame. All types of libraries are being hurt by this myth that it's all out there on the internet. Well, it may all be out there on the internet, but you have to find it. And especially students need to be shown how to do legitimate research, how to know what you can count on as being the latest information and what isn't. And how to find good authors, for heaven's sakes. Just what to read next. These are all important things that librarians do. And again, school libraries are just so important. Hospital libraries are being cut. We just see, you know, and the public libraries are not getting lots of money from their localities either. So it's a hard time for libraries out there.
If I could just add one other thing quickly. You know, the commercial pressures on the internet, whether we're talking about in the context of net neutrality or whatever, but the commercial pressures on the internet are constant. And it isn't all on the internet, or you could say it's all somewhere electronically and get the internet. But the fact is, we mentioned earlier, what will be, I think, important in 25 years is that libraries are still paying for certain services that are not available to the general public through the internet, you know, at large.
Scholarly journals, medical journals.
These electronic journals that we were talking about earlier, language tools, business support tools, streaming tools that are not available to people freely. It's a complete myth. And plus, I think ongoing, what's going to become more and more important, I think to Peg's comment about indicating the importance of a school librarian, that you have got to have staff that have depth, that are educated, that know how to connect these various things and function as representatives for people to get information. And so, I mean good information. You can get something, but good information,
right,
I think, is the key.
Right. We're going to go to Wick in Augusta. Hi, Wick.
Yeah, good afternoon. Listen, I've got just a couple comments. I've been involved with the fundraising for the Lithgow Library over the last couple of years. And I don't know if it's been mentioned, but I may need to celebrate what the communities in it, the cities, have done with their libraries over the last 15 years. At a time when there has been no support from the state and, you know, everybody is really on the defensive, library after library has done major renovation, and it's through, you know, local community work. In Augusta, what we've seen is that, you know, 66%, two-thirds of the kids in Augusta are on free or reduced lunch. The middle class is sort of just clinging to its place in Augusta, and many of the people of means have left for other communities. In the face of that, we've raised a bunch of money and had a referendum last month in which 82% of the people who voted in favor of a bond for expanding the facility. When you have so many people in need, this is a great equalizer, and I think statewide we should be celebrating all of these successes.
I so appreciate you calling in, Wick, and I know that the Lithgow Library expansion was a big item on the, you know, the last ballot. Tell me a little bit about what is going to happen there other than the physical expansion of the library. What kind of services will be offered in the future that haven't been offered in the past or have been difficult to offer in the past?
Well, because the facility has been very much space limited, programs for children, programs for teens, availability for veterans, and just general access to computers have been limited. This expansion and renovation is going to triple the size of the facility. So all of those will be offered in a way that they can't be now, as well as having a large in a public meeting room to do program and to welcome outside groups. I mean, it's really transformative.
Well, I do appreciate you calling in. Can't wait to see the finished library. What is the estimated date of completion? Do we have one?
It should be, 2 years from now, basically.
Okay. Thanks
right
again.
Right now, next spring. Thank you very much.
Okay. Going to John in Lincolnville. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. A couple of quick things. Jamie, this is, I wanted to say hello to Jamie. This is John Burstein. And Jamie,
hey, John.
Was enormously helpful to me as I was producing books. I do kids' books. And I love the Camden Public Library. It's terrific. But there was a comment that you were making for about everything being available on the Internet, you know, somewhere. But books you still have to pay for on the Internet. I love to read, and I suddenly get a calling. I see a comment somewhere, and I want to quickly look at it, you know, get that book, which I love the digital world because you can bring the books right away. But then you go to iTunes or something, you're paying $14-$15 for books. But with the public library, you get these books for free. And I have saved hundreds, maybe thousands of dollars by the ability by being served by the library. So I just wanted to sing the praises. I think the library is one of the great institutions, great American, well, may not be an American institution, but one of the great democratic institutions that we have still left. I also want to point out that while in Maine we have blueberries and strawberries, we don't have any libraries. And that is my one pet peeve of people referring to libraries as libraries.
Okay, Jamie, he's your friend. You get to reply to that
John,
one.
John, it's good to hear your voice. I hope things are going well.
Thanks so much for calling in. You know, before we run out of time, I want to ask you, Steve, about an interesting study I read about recently linking smoking rates and library usage. This was using the Portland Public Library, correct?
Yeah, we did a clinical study with MaineMed, and Dr. Sam Zegar was the lead doctor on this, and it associated the frequency of library use with the likelihood that you would stop smoking. So if you use the public library six or more times a year, you're three times more likely to stop smoking.
What is the causation? Why do they think?
Well, it doesn't prove causation. It proves association. In some ways it makes sense. It's a great environment. I mean, if you tend to pick up behaviors or lifestyles, people that you associate with, there aren't a lot of people drinking and smoking in the public library.
That you know. Oh, no, I'm kidding.
Well,
going to Sam in Waterville. Hi, Sam.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Well, I wanted you to know I'm a professional librarian. I am now retired. I got my degree from Simmons. And ever since I was in high school, I was known as a library rat, which meant I spent a lot of time in the public library. And I think you're just doing a wonderful job. And I might even come out of retirement to try to help.
How long have you been retired from library work, Sam?
I drifted more into the technological end of it, presentation technology, and I retired in 2010.
Yeah. Okay, so you've been a part of this sort of revolution, the transformation in libraries.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, thanks for calling in and the shout out to the librarians here in the room. Mm-hmm. As we say goodbye, wondering if you have any final thoughts, anything that people should know that they might not know about their library.
Steve gets to start.
Well, I think to clarify the point about the everything's on the Internet, that was those that know me, that was in quotes. Clearly we have more people reading more print than ever before in the history of Portland Public Library, certainly. We have a shared collections management center that we're building with Maine Historical Society that is all about on the back end of the library's collections and what you can discover, building a print collection that will reach upwards of 500,000 items eventually.
You found that, didn't you? When you reopened the Portland Public Library, the more people who came in to use the library for other reasons.
Right.
ended up checking out books,
right,
and going home and reading them.
Yeah, it's the important thing. You know, when you asked about what would be different in 2025, I think what would be the same would be great environments, dynamic programming, incredibly intelligent staff that's committed to the mission of sharing resources and the public good. In other words, making people's questions their own. That will be the same. So the various things that the details that happen inside, we're not sweating them. We're along for the ride responding to what's happening in our society.
I think, too, to capitalize on what you said about the internet and you know, things being available on the internet, David Lankes is a scholar that does a lot of work on libraries, and he talks about this idea that knowledge just doesn't sit on a shelf somewhere. It's really that transference of the material to someone using it when they become enlightened.
Like activating the resources.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, that philosophical thought's going to have to be our last one. We're out of time. Barbara, Jamie, Steve, thank you all for being here. Barbara McDade is the director of the Bangor Public Library. Jamie Ritter is director of Reader and Information Services at the Maine State Library. And Steve Magone is the executive director of the Portland Public Library. Tomorrow on the program, the exploding popularity of yoga. We will discuss its benefits for fitness, health, and the mind, and the upcoming Maine Yoga Fest this upcoming weekend. On today's program, Nikki Shields ran the board and our intern Charlotte Ruddy helped produce the show. We had additional help from the MPBN web team. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our podcast by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.